Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
This is Graham McTavish, and you are listening to Ginger and Summer on the Outlander podcast.
Welcome to episode 104 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So I don't know if you could tell, but my voice is a little ratchety.
I don't, what happened? Where have you been? What
caused this? I have no idea. I got tons of sleep this last week. I didn't go to any pubs and like scream talking to any beautifully kilted, tall Stars hired kilt wearing, I already said kilt, didn't I? Yeah. Gentleman.
Well, he wasn't wearing a kilt when you were chatting him up.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Oh,
they were all out of kilts.
And his name was Sam. I was like, oh, but it wasn't the Sam. But no. It was a Sam. But he was, they were so lovely and so nice. Anyway, we're talking about the Outlander kilt, they're called the Kilted Hotties, but they're the people, the actor models that Stars hires to go out and run around in kilts and talk up and chat up and yell up and push up and dance up Outlander, anything and everything out in the streets, inside and outside of Comic-Con. And we'll talk more about them later.
True, but Kilted Hottie is definitely specific enough.
That's true.
So
I just wanted to describe, they don't just stand there.
Oh, no. No, they get everyone involved. They do a very good job at getting people excited.
They do.
About themselves.
And right as you...
Outlander.
Right as you pose for your picture and your friend's about to take it, they hold up that little placard they had that said Stars on it, Outlander. I was like, I love it. It's because they're there. They're hired by Stars to help spread the word, and they do a magnificent job. And they, of course, were always, or I should say never, not with the Lady Pipers.
We love the Lady Pipers.
And we'll share more of their stuff, some more stuff that we recorded, in the next episode, which basically all this to say, what are the announcements this week, Sam?
The announcement this week is that we will be discussing announcements when we get to our Comic-Con episode.
So basically, our announcements will be in the announcements section next week because so it's not that we had news, like new stuff, but so much that we did or so much that they shared happened during Comic-Con week. And we have a decent size Comic-Con themed whatever episode talking about how we got down there, what we did when we were down there, some fun stuff, some funny stuff, and then how I kind of lost my voice a tiny bit, you know, yelling over a live band, standing with nowhere to, standing means you're not sitting. It was an amazing week. But
stop
we'll go
giving
into,
it away. Stop
I'm
giving
so
it away.
Sorry. Well, saying it was amazing is not giving it away. But by this time next week, my voice will be back. So anyway.
We'll see about that.
Hey,
I don't have to stop talking for it to come back.
Hush a monkey. So anyway, we will, I don't know what language that was, we will include anything and everything related to our time at Comic-Con and the time leading up to Comic-Con in our next episode, which will be about
Comic-Con. In fact, we probably will entitle it
Comic-Con. Maybe Comic-Con 2015 or something, because we were there last year. Our pod was represented last year. Also, we will also say, and we'll probably say it again in the Comic-Con episode, we have stuff that we did at Comic-Con that is not Outlander related, which is kind of cool because it means we can share goodies later on.
But it's Comic-Con related.
Exactly. So it'll be Comic-Con episode or something. So I guess that kind of wraps up our non-announcement section.
Exactly. So, without further ado, let's go on to our read-along.
So now we are moving on to our read-along. This week we are covering chapter 21, entitled Untimely Resurrections.
Dun, dun, dun.
Resurrection. It's only one. It's a singular.
Just one person, untimely, not more than one.
Untimely Resurrection. And as I'm sure you've heard, our friend of the show, Lene, is back to join us for this chapter.
Yay.
Yay.
Hello, Lene.
Yay.
No horsies this weekend. No horsies this episode. But actually, nope. There are horsies like in one or two chapters from now. There's a chapter called The Royal Stud.
I know. That's in the next chapter. Maybe I should have.
Maybe you can gallop on back.
I know. Maybe I can.
or canter.
I think... So they're heading to the Duke's house. I don't remember how they got... Oh, that's right. The Duke was at the dinner party there where Mary was... came so unceremoniously and screamed. And he was at the dinner party, and so yeah.
he skedaddled quite quickly.
Yeah, he skedaddled pretty quickly, and then they got it. But they did get invited to his house so that Jamie could conduct some business.
So which Duke is this?
The Duke of
Sandringham.
Because don't they have? Isn't Castellotti? Wasn't he a Duke?
He was a Duke. Yeah.
Duke of Sandringham. Isn't he the one?
He's English. Yeah. Castellotti is Italian.
And he's the one that Claire happens to mention to Blackjack in the first book.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He's also the one who turned to book.
Yeah, the one with the high voice. Yeah.
I can't wait.
Played by
It's coming.
Simon Callow.
Yes.
Yes.
Like in our first episode, Simon Callow.
He's going to be perfect. Right. He's going
to
be perfect.
Oh my gosh.
I just can't wait to. I want to see if they keep the voice.
Oh my gosh.
It is such an easy thing to affect. I mean,
I've seen him do so many different characters. He'll just be perfect. He'll be perfect anyway.
And I know I've said this before, but I fell in love with him in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, I know.
He was so good in that movie.
Anyway,
every single person, whether it's a lead or a character actor or someone who's there for just a blip, every person has been sublime.
Yeah.
And so Simon Callow is, I mean, here we are doing a read along for the second book. So, God willing, we're going to have Simon Callow in book two, season two.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. Okay, so...
they pull up to the Duke's house.
And they're discussing as to whether or not Charles is actually trying to raise money for an army. And they both kind of come to the conclusion that, yeah, most likely he is. Because they kind of think, oh, well, maybe he's trying to just get money so that he can take... what's her name? His Louisa?
Louise de Tour.
And his baby.
Baby.
and take them away, but they figure, no, he's probably just raising.
But if he's Scottish, one to me is his wee baby.
His wee baby.
Baby?
Baby.
Makes me think of, like, Brave. They call them
babies. And not the bubby.
Not
the bubby. It's the bubby like boobies?
Kind of. It's like the New Jersey thing, right?
What? New Jersey thing?
I don't watch those Housewives shows.
I do.
I do not.
I only watch New Jersey and New York.
I am a strict believer that I'm really only interested in scripted television. For the most part, because reality TV isn't really reality. It's still moderately scripted.
Yes, it is.
I would rather go into a show more edited than scripted.
No, they put them in situations.
If you hear about the behind-the-scenes stuff, they put them in situations, and they... No, it's... it's all fake. Anyway.
I would rather be on watch a show that is...
Completely scripted and well done and well acted.
Thank you. Completely scripted from the beginning, and you know what you're getting into when you go there. You're like, this is scripted television. None of this is real. These people aren't, you know, trying to whatever. So I have tried desperately to not get on the whole reality TV track. The only thing I ever watch is, like, sometimes cooking shows. That's about it.
No, my husband's way into the cooking shows. Those just make me hungry. I don't like watching them. Because they make me hungry. I'm not even hungry.
They do.
I'm like, I just ate, and it's making me hungry. Anyway.
So they arrive at the Duke's house.
Yes.
And as the men are speaking, Claire is kind of sent out to look at the art?
Yeah, the Duke kind of says, you can look at, why don't you go over there and look at this or that, or my snuff boxes, or he has like collections of little bric-a-brac. Things for her to look at, and she goes, okay. And with her whole thing was, she was going to go off to look for Alex. That was her whole, she thought, oh, well, that serves my purpose anyway, because I want to go off and look for Alex Randall, for Mary, anyway. So she sneaks out to look for him. And she goes down the hall, right? And she thinks she sees someone, and they duck in a room.
Yes.
And she's like, well, that's odd behavior for a servant. So she turns the corner. There's only one room slightly ajar. So she goes in, and here she, like, scares Mary out of her wits, of all people, to be there, which is, like...
dangerous.
Dangerous.
I don't know.
They never say how she got in the house.
They didn't. You're right. I don't think they said how she got in the house.
Obviously,
but they said how she got there. I mean, she took a carriage or something to get there.
She did.
Okay.
She did. But they don't really say how she got in the house. Anyway. And she's, and of course, Mary's also there looking for Alex to see if, you know, he will still basically have her after she's been soiled, quote unquote, which drives me crazy.
I know. And she doesn't know, and we don't know as readers yet, that he's actually
not there.
Not there.
No.
And we find out later why he, that may be the case.
Yeah, yeah.
So Claire is, like Mary, trying to find Alex Randall. And mm-hmm. she goes off on her own, as you said, and she runs into Mary, also looking for Alex. And they find out from the footman, who kind of is a little bit like this. What do you call this? Like
snooty.
Footman's like, yeah, the footman's a little snooty. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, he no longer works here.
He's snooty because he
of says he was, works. He doesn't just say doesn't work here. He says he was fired? Dismissed.
Oh, dismissed.
Yeah. But when you think about it, the service staff is always, their level of snootiness depends upon
their
level.
Who's in charge of them.
Whoever yeah. they're hired by.
No,
whoever,
that's true.
The higher up in society mm-hmm. their patron is, or the person that is paying their wages is, mm-hmm. the snootier the staff is, because they're like, I work for so-and-so. I'm his personal valet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, it's they're conversely relatable.
Yeah, so the footman then says that he understands that Randall, that Alex has taken a ship back to England, and then Mary starts flipping out.
Yes.
And she screams and like, what? He can't? Oh my God.
And Claire's like, damn it, woman, or damn it, girl, what the heck? And so she makes a point to say that Diana is very descriptive, very deliberate in her description of the floor. It's carpeted where they are. And so doesn't she say she takes her shoes off and she runs after Mary, who has heels on?
Yeah.
And she's able to actually, she's faster than Mary, but because Mary got left before, she got a head start.
Well, not yet. Claire says she takes her heels off.
Yes.
And takes off after her to try to gain a little bit of ground.
Exactly.
On her,
so. And so she has the potential for catching up, but and she sees Mary's like skirt like disappear around this corner, she's like, damn it, Mary, damn it, Janet. And she
turns the corner
and boom, runs into a body.
Runs into a man.
A very interesting man.
And then we hear the Jesus H.
effing Roosevelt. Oh, no, you're right. Not Roosevelt.
No, no Roosevelt this time. Because who does she run into?
Somebody who's definitely F-worthy.
He runs into the booty bandit.
She runs. Booty bandit? Is that an official title?
No, that's not nice.
Because there she's looking at Jonathan Randall, whom... Mm-hmm. She
Black
and Jamie
Jack.
Both thought were dead.
Well, I think we all thought he was dead.
We all thought he was dead.
Based on McGranick telling us that he got trampled by cows.
Yeah.
Which was a fitting death for an a-hole.
Yeah. we're all hoping, with fingers crossed, that
Marley.
He was dead.
They were both a-holes.
And Randall still has... He grabs her, I think, by the arms to, like, steady mm-hmm. himself and her. And then he looks up at her, and he's, like, totally taken off guard as well. And because she's the last person he expected to see. And he says, well, I figured you probably would have gone off and married some sort of Frenchman or something like that. Mm-hmm. If it suits or something. Mm-hmm. I forget what he says.
So he said, married a Frenchman, did you? I always did think you were a French spy. I trust your new husband keeps you in better order than... dot, dot, dot. Dun, dun, dun. The appearance of Jamie
turns the corner.
And then everyone goes...
And then there's this very long, awkward silence.
Right. Not when I read it. When I read it, it was like, what's going on? I didn't pause.
You know, I have to say, though, I like that that Blackjack, before Jamie gets there, when he is talking to her, he's like, I'm surprised you're not dead, basically. Like, what did you do? Turn yourself into a wolf? He threw her out in the snow, knowing there were wolves out there.
Yes.
And he was like, well, she's dead. But I made. I kept my word. I got her out of the building alive. Jerk off. Anyway, so he feels like maybe she does have some sort of witchy type powers or something. Like that's the kind of feeling, the vibe she gets from him, like this superstitious vibe. Like
Diana,
because
that,
she
right?
did predict his death. She like stood there and predicted his death.
Yep.
And sure enough, here she thought she was wrong and thought he had died, and here he's alive. So obviously. He still may hold true. Mm-hmm. You never know.
I mean, it clearly does.
So anyway, so Jamie stands behind her. She knows he's there. She turns, and he puts his hand out to her. and takes her.
Takes her?
I don't think he takes her.
No, not in front of people.
Not like takes her, but like takes her, like...
Like escorts her?
Like escorts her away. Like, he doesn't even say anything.
And because he didn't speak.
He literally doesn't speak. He doesn't say a word. He literally just turns, takes her, turns her, like they're just leaving to go, not to say a word. Because he has seen Blackjack. He sees he's there. She says he has no expression on his face whatsoever. And this is the this part always gets me. When Randall says his name and says Jamie, and the way Diana describes it, the voice was hoarse with shock and held a note halfway between disbelief and pleading. It just always gets me, like, he really honestly felt like there was some sort of connection between, and well, there is, granted is, there is, but not
but
the kind
different connection that he from has.
Not
side.
The kind that Jamie feels.
And you can see, I know we're on book two, and we haven't got to the end of season one TV series, but you can see the kernel beginning sprout of that in Tobias's performance thus far. When he was whipping Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
When he's talking to Claire in all, basically all of episode six, the garrison commander. Holy monkey balls. I mean, that, he's already like got this like.
Sort of infatuation going on with Jamie. And it's creepy.
And we don't know much about it in the series. And people who have watched the series, we know no backstory yet. So there's no reason, we don't know anything about anything except that he's got either a mild infatuation or at least he's sadistic. We know that. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
But we can see the kernel. If you know where the story is going, at least where the books go, it's so interesting to see what they're already showing.
Yeah, oh what they're already bringing into the show.
Exactly.
Yeah, no,
well,
I love
but
it
that's
too.
Also a credit to the actors. I feel like
they've
Tobias
all done their research.
I think, and they've all already read the first book. They read it, like, probably cover to cover before they even started, so they have a little bit.
And I'm sure they've all talked to Diana. I know that for sure Sam has talked to Diana. I mean, he has constant communication with her at any point he wants to, like, ask her questions. And, I mean, for God's sakes, he knows the whole ghost story.
Can we talk about how nice that must be for
him? He's the only person in the world besides pretty much Diana who knows, probably.
Not even that. Not even that. How nice it must be to have somebody.
Well,
to have somebody you could contact and be like, you know, I've been on the fence about how Jamie would feel about this and that and the other. Let me call the person who created him.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
And get some
but
insight.
About the ghost, I know we're going to find out the hows and whats and everything behind it in the last scene of the last book. But as far as who the ghost is,
we all know it's Jamie.
Yeah.
But
do we? You just ruined it for half of our cast.
No, anybody who's listening has been listening to the read-along and they know what's going on. But it's not just that he's the ghost.
No, it's what is he doing there?
Yeah.
What brought... Because he appears just before... Well, the day before. She goes back to him.
Yeah.
So there is something cyclical something. About this that we don't know. There's been a lot of guesses and whatever. Which, dude, we could have an entire episode about that. And I hope we do one day. But we're not close enough. We're not far.
So anyway... So Jamie then stops when he says Jamie's name. He stops and he says, no.
And like
you're not allowed to say my freaking name
ever. Until
he says, I am called Lord Brock Turok. Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
For formality's sake. And beyond the requirements of formality, you will never speak to me again until you beg for your life at the point of my sword.
Exactly.
Then you may use my name, for it will be the last word you ever speak.
Kiva.
And it's like, that's some...
But can we just take a moment
and
acknowledge the fact that that was the best freaking comeback you could
ever have.
What, to say no?
No.
Oh, but you can't say my name until you're at the end of my sword?
Right. Yeah. I'm like... Yeah. For him to be that, I mean, it's Diana, obviously, but for a character to be that.
Who has been.
No, but to really be bad. That on point.
Yeah.
That you.
After seeing a ghost rise from the dead, basically.
Don't even. Not even.
And the
that,
person who was
even
your
that.
Bandit.
How many situations have you been in where you walked away and thought of like 30 million things you could have said that would have been 100% more clever than what you actually said?
Yeah.
He said the best response he could have come up with on the spot.
Yeah.
Bravo, Diana.
Yeah. Excellent.
I mean, she probably took 3 days to write that.
I was just about to say.
But Jamie said it like that.
You don't know. Maybe she just had it all up.
She could have wicked it out. Channeled it.
She could have. Possible. Anyway. So, okay. So he tears her out. Shut up.
What does that even mean?
I don't even know.
Tears her out of the building. They tear out of the building together.
Okay, better. They tear out of the building.
Okay, if he tears up.
I'm afraid what he might do to her.
You guys are taking all my words out of context and making them dirty tonight. You have potty brain.
Anyway. Welcome to my world. Have you never known me not to have potty brain? Yeah, okay. How long have you known me?
All right.
How long? Can you think about it? I mean, our friendship is legal of age to drink.
Over 20 years. Wait, whoa. I was like, you're not... Wait, was your friendship ever illegal?
No. It was... There was a point when it was illegal to drink, but our friendship...
Are you hesitating?
Not that we didn't, no. But...
Our friendship could walk into a bar and order a drink right now.
Yes. That's all I'm saying. Oh, I see. You mean how old our friendship is.
So they tear out of the Duke's house together. Is that better?
Thank you.
He throws her in a carriage. By the time she gets her skirts all organized... to see what's going on. He's not in there with her. And she's pounding on the roof of the carriage telling them to slow down, and they're just ignoring her, and they get her all the way home, and she's like, why didn't you stop? And he goes, the driver says, my lord told me to go and not stop until I got home. And then he literally, like, taps the horse, like, see ya. Like, I'm not even, like, giving you an option to take you back. Like, mm-hmm. I'm gone. He told me I am not to take you back.
That, you know, how fast must he have spoken to get all of that out?
Without her even knowing
her, but if he dumped her in, think about the dresses they wore. It takes a while to get that stuff under control.
He may have, but at the same time,
he could be pretty short with words and say, get her home, don't let her come back here.
Yeah.
That's all you got to say.
Or take her home as fast as,
take her straight home as fast as you can, don't let her get back here. I mean, that's all you got to say.
I don't know. I guess I'm a little more long-winded than that.
Yeah, you are. You'd be like, okay, so this thing happened in the house, and I'm totally upset
by it. No, okay, but can I tell you?
I think I might have to kill this guy.
Can I tell you that if Ginger was telling the story, she would have started with, 5 years ago, this man brutalized me, and then 3 months ago, he raped me, and now I may have to kill him. So that being said, can you please take her back to the house, leave her there, and for God's sake, don't bring her back.
Ginger always takes the long road to point A, from a point A to point B.
She wants to make sure we have all the information we may or may not need to make.
It's all of,
I'm a valid decision.
It's a people
pleaser.
Nope.
Okay. A people pleaser thing.
It's not though.
So Ellen G shares, when Jamie and BJR run into each other, each thought the other must be dead, and here they are with Jamie in the mix to boot. And when BJR sees Jamie, I wrote in the margin, wow. Then he pops her in a carriage, Jamie, and sends her home alone. So whom does she turn to? Marta, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we're just about to get to the house? We haven't got there yet, right?
No, we're at the house.
Okay. But who should appear before Marta? Another untimely resurrection. Not that he was dead, but someone she did not expect to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, she tells Fergus to run and find Marta first, and then she... literally runs into
Dougal McKenzie.
Dougal. I'm so excited.
My gosh.
Yeah, I love him.
I'm Graham. So excited. Okay.
I love Graham.
I'm excited
for one of my favorites.
Me too. I'm so excited for just, everything. There's nothing I don't want. I want it all right now. Or all over, whatever. But there is something, besides Tobias, I mean, he's always there. But there is something about Dougal, period. But there's something about Graham as Dougal in season 2. Who knows if it's going to be exactly, whatever they're going to do with it. But we haven't gotten there in the read-along yet, so I don't want to spoil anything, but at a certain part at the end of the book, that kills us all.
Mm-hmm.
Holy monkey.
Yeah, I don't need to get there.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, anyway. So he tells her to sit down. He says she doesn't look like she's feeling that great. So, yeah, and she's feeling like nauseated.
Maybe,
and like,
let's talk about
everything that's happened. She's like, it's just swirling around her.
And she's pregnant.
I mean, so she's like,
she's already
when you're pregnant, weird things affect you weirdly. I don't know how else to describe it. Like odd things affect you, and you feel like you're gonna vomit.
Or like, you turn on the TV and the commercials make you cry.
Taco Bell commercial.
I wish I had that gordita. Why did I have a gordita crunch?
Oh, and then like the Hallmark commercials. Oh, and SPCA commercials are the worst. Sarah McLachlan
used to like eat a D-I-C-K because every one of those commercials.
Did you say de-educate? No, she used to eat a D-I-C-K.
Oh. Because like every time music comes on and you see those sad looking animals and I'm like, oh my god, I didn't have enough going on today.
Like I couldn't watch that kind of thing when I was pregnant. And I couldn't, if people were posting, if people post stuff on Facebook, like about animals or things, because I have so many animal friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're always posting about rescue animals.
Friends who like animals or like animals who are your friends?
Both, I suppose. But yes.
Like woodland creatures?
Like Bambi?
Like with Snow White going out, you like put your hand down. Like,
no.
Speaking of Snow White and Cinderella, in the recent Cinderella movie, which I saw. Did you see it?
You saw it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It's good, but they're, I mean, I know it's not 100% traditional, and I know it's not the Into the Woods version, whatever. Into the Woods was actually closer to
the original.
The original. There's no, I mean, singing aside, that's fine. There were no little birdies. There was no golden shower, whatever you want to call it.
What? Do you know what a golden shower is?
Yes! But
there was never a golden shower
in Cinderella.
That may have come later.
That was a different version.
The story was
I've
over.
Never seen that version of Cinderella.
After they got married, that prince was freaking kinky, you know? I just don't know what to say.
Okay, but we talked...
Something about... If you go back and read it, it's about shiver, quaving, quiver, whatever.
What?
The tree. She sings to the trees. And from the trees comes down this gold, falls down on her. Or like golden leaves or golden something.
Oh, yes.
It's not like golden rain, but it's a golden shower of something.
It's like golden leaves, isn't it?
Might be.
All right. Well, here... Okay. This is moderately off topic, but...
No, not ever.
I just want to say that when I saw the movie Into the Woods... Mm-hmm. I never realized how creepy it would be to have birds fly into your house and pick shit out of your fireplace, because all those birds, when she was singing, birds, come and clean, come and pick all these beans, these lentils out of my fireplace, and then like a flock of birds comes flying into her like living room, I was like, oh my god, that would freak me out.
Have you seen, speaking of birds, have you seen the movie The Birds?
It was so the birds. I was like, those birds are going to kill her and eat the lentils.
Well, they peck out both sisters' eyes, don't they?
In the movie though, but in the actual
Into the Woods.
In Into the Woods,
or in the real story,
in
the fairy tale,
in the musical on Broadway, they do that as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Peck out the sisters' eyes.
Into the Woods version of the musicals are much closer to the actual written.
They were all very gruesome.
They were. They're
I mean,
not
they cut off pieces of their feet to fit
exactly.
into... Oh, it's disgusting.
It is gross.
So, yeah. Okay, so we are at Dougal. He shows up unexpectedly, and she's a little queasy. And Let's see.
So she talks with Dougal, and she learns more about what's going on back at home and about... what's his name?
Oh, Colm. About how he's getting worse.
Yes.
And how he's needing stronger drink to sleep at night. And she feels
And she knows that when it gets to a certain point, he's going to have to go for the opiates. And once he goes for the opiates, he's not going to... He won't be sensible.
He won't
and
be the
he
leader
will,
anymore.
Will no longer be able to be chief. Ellen writes, "This is like a comedy of errors. Claire needs to keep it together, but at every turn, someone or something pops up and she needs to deal with it then. And then hearing from Dougal about Colm's body deteriorating more and more... And his need for stronger drink to calm the pain." And yeah, it's very sad. I mean, it is sad. I don't hate the character of Colm. He does what he can for his people. And
he's just very pragmatic.
Very much so.
He's very pragmatic. He has a definite
order
of what's important. Mm-hmm. And his clan comes first.
Always.
His clan, his family, you know, those certain things come first. And if, people have to get, put on trial for being a witch, so be it. You know,
Oopsie.
It wasn't in his best interest.
We didn't mean that, Claire, but you were down there.
You know, it wasn't in his best interest
to
intervene.
He didn't have anything to do with making it happen, but he definitely wasn't going to get involved because it would directly affect his focal points and what he was trying to work for. He's like, it sucks. I don't think you deserve that, but I can't bother right now.
Yeah.
I have other focuses.
So anyway, they chat about, this reminds me of the whole cave scene of Dougal and her in the cave and him trying to seduce her, because she brings up seduction. He says, "Seduction, I offered you marriage." And she says, "You offered to rape me, as I recall."
There's a little
little bit of a difference.
Which I love. I love that Claire just, like, can snap, you know, at him. Like, it was awesome. But, you know, he said he would marry her by force if necessary. Mm-hmm. And then of course, Murtaugh came in and
but again,
saved everything. But still.
So well written by Diana. The comeback you wish you'd come up with when you're faced with people that are pissing you off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ellen G. writes, and she, meaning Claire, she leads Dougal to the police commissioner's office. Interesting that when he hears from Claire that BJR is in Paris, Dougal's next question is, where's Jamie?
Yeah. Well, he's of the same mind because he knows what's between them. Well, not what happened in Wentworth at the end.
But he knows
flogging,
about the whipping and the
flogging. And so he knows there's something off with this guy.
Well, yeah.
And he knows that there's some kind of a weird thing going on with him. And so, yeah. And Dougal, oddly enough, you know, she says, you know, I need you to lie for me, basically, to help me out. We need to go to the police to keep Randall out of, away from Jamie long enough to keep him from getting killed.
And, not just that, but also to keep Jamie out of trouble.
Because that's what I mean.
If Jamie... Well, no, to both. Well,
public dueling is like a killing offense.
Yes. Not that they love...
I know.
Not that they love BJR, but if they can get BJR and make him inaccessible to Jamie...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they will save Jamie's life.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. Well, and Claire is still thinking about... I'm sure the first thing that came through Claire's mind was, he's still alive. This is why my ring is still on my finger. This is why Frank is still alive. So her second thought is, I can't let Jamie kill him, because then for sure.
Oh, we haven't even gotten there yet.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So anyway.
That's a whole other thing that comes up.
Oh, and then she asks him if he's heard of, because she tells him about her friend Mary and how she was raped and everything. And she asks, mm-hmm. Have you heard of this? And actually, he was the one. He says, asks her if you've heard of... How do you say that? Les disciples?
Dumal. Les disciples? Oh, what's the other part?
Du mal.
Is it M-A-L?
Yeah.
Les disciples du mal.
Du mal.
Mm-hmm. The disciples of evil.
Is that what it means?
Mm-hmm. Well, mal is bad.
I know mal is bad.
And
disciples?
Disciples.
Disciples. I figured disciples of bad, but I was like, evil, really?
I mean, evil, bad. I mean, bad is evil. Evil is
anyway,
bad.
Anyway, it just seems, I don't know, it just seems creepy that, like, these rich guys with nothing better to do go around raping women and cutting off their nipples.
Can we talk about that? That probably
gross.
Is something that still kind of happens today. I mean, rich people kind of get away with shit.
No, it's in the news. All the time.
About nipples?
Not about nipples being cut off. That's kind of...
They keep that hush-hush.
They keep that quiet.
It's under wraps.
Yeah. Anyway.
Bandages.
Ugh, anyway.
So yeah, that initiation into that Les Disciples group.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy town.
Taking a maidenhead or the nipples of a married woman.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I mean, what do they do with them once they take
where
them?
Where did... Hold on a second.
I mean, do they wear them around their neck?
Okay, we haven't gotten to the craziness that is Voyager. And that'll be all.
Yeah, that is a whole bunch of basket of crazy.
There are some things.
Well, and I'm sure if she's, like, she's a researcher.
Oh, totally.
And if she researched the culture of the islands they were on.
Yes.
I'm sure that all...
I mean, voodoo.
All,
hello. All
yeah, I'm sure that all... Play, yeah, voodoo's freaking creepy. Anyway, so...
But...
And he names... And he actually names names of people that he has heard the whisperings
part
of
these groups.
Part of these groups. And one of them is the Comte Saint-Germain.
Again.
Now... I wonder, and no, I did not look it up, and I don't know if you ladies did either. I wonder if, I'm sure Diana looked into it, because she'll look into everything, but I wonder if this was something that, number one, if these types of, you know, rogue, whatever level of society, rogue bandit groups existed, number one. Number two, if they did, were they upper class, you know, or middle upper class, whatever. Number three... Did they literally have these types of initiation rituals? I mean, it's actually no different than its modern equivalent, even though the take the class out of it or take mm-hmm. the money out of it, it's no different than a gang initiation.
Yeah.
I mean, think about
or
it.
Or a fraternity or sorority
yeah.
initiation.
Well, hopefully it's a little different than those.
It's like hazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful. That's some
I still live hazing. In fear about people driving around with headlights off.
Yeah, I know.
They're like, because, you know, there was a period of time where they were like, flash your headlights at somebody so they know their lights are off. And then everyone was saying, don't do that because it's a gang initiation. If you do that, they're going to follow you and kill you. And I was like, well, that's terrible.
That's terrible.
I'm just trying to be a good person. Exactly. And you're going to follow me home and kill me now because I tried to let you know your headlights were off. That's terrible.
I think that may have been an urban legend, but
I think it was. I'm not ready to find out.
I'm not either. I'm just
so
saying.
I keep to myself.
Okay, so they go to the police, and they figure, well, Randall will be taken in probably within the hour. And she had sent the coach home.
And when she walks into her rooms, what does she see? Her scissors?
Her scissors from her...
her medical kit?
Medical kit, yeah.
Ellen G. writes, Claire walks into her rooms and sees her scissors out and Jamie's hair on the tabletop. Now, this may just seem weird, looking at like, what the what? But if you remember back to his relaying the story when they were at the fountain in front of Versailles, mm-hmm. early in the book, or early in the Paris section, it talked about that the young woman that was there, or the woman
the
who
duel
was there,
he fought.
And the one duel he fought. And
about his hair getting
And his hair way. Got in the way. And... you know, these little things are put in there that you may not remember. And I'm sure I didn't remember it on my first read. I'm sure I didn't. Well, but seeing that hair, you're like, this is so random.
Yeah.
But then you're like, holy crap.
And she also sees that his sword is gone, which when she had been in their apartment, their room before, it was still there. Mm-hmm. And she thought, well, she knows then he's not out there yet mm-hmm. because he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't go and challenge him without his sword because exactly. He's talked so much about how his sword is a part of him. And when he fights, it's his sword and it becomes a part of him when he fights and he can't,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's very important to him. So
two things. One, when I saw the hair, I immediately knew what happened when I read it. I was like,
no, when I first read it, I did not.
Cause I remembered that whole sequence of him saying his hair got in his eyes.
Yeah, I did too.
Two. Give me a second.
How about three?
Hang on. I just distracted myself.
That's funny.
Hair. Duel.
Makeup.
Oh, two. I'm wondering how excited Sam is to be able to cut his hair.
I know.
Like, he's been growing it faithfully for the last, like, year and a half. As long as we've been podcasting, he's been growing his hair out for the role. He's not been cutting it, and it's been getting longer. And, you know, men who are used to having short hair...
And it's long enough now. He wears it in a ponytail.
I know.
He wears it pulled back
He's
now.
So close to having, like, a hipster man bun that it's, yeah, like, not even, like...
Well, funny. He has curly hair. He has, like, pretty wavy, almost curly hair.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to see him in a hipster man bun. I kind of want to.
Sam or Jamie?
Sam.
Yes.
Yes.
To it all.
It's all the same. Come on now. That's when she notices his sword's gone. We talked about that. And she also looks down at her rings and is reminded that Frank is still alive because she still does have her ring, which she's kind of kept as like a talisman that, mm-hmm. well, he's still alive. So somehow, I don't know how it worked out, even though in her mind, you know, all along they had thought that Blackjack was dead. She knew Frank was still alive. She thought, how could this ring exist if he never existed, right?
It's so hard to read these chapters having read the whole series.
Yeah.
But having read this whole book, it's so hard to be objective about her state of mind in these chapters.
Knowing
where it goes, it's like, durr.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like,
well.
But it's like, the first time I read it, I'm sure I was equally as confused as Claire as to why she still had this ring on her finger.
Mm-hmm.
But having read the books and having, you know, come out the other end of the whole thing, I'm like, duh. Like I said, durr. But we're moving on.
Ellen G. writes, and now to the gist of this chapter, talking Jamie into not dueling with BJR for Frank's sake. And we learn from Jamie what Jack Randall made him do in Wentworth.
Didn't we learn that last year? Last book?
We learned some things.
Some of it.
We learn more now.
Yeah.
We learn what Randall made him do in Wentworth. OMG, she writes.
Yeah.
And she also writes, and then I circled in the book, I can stand a lot, but just because I can, does that mean I must? I mean, mm-hmm. gosh, poor Jamie. And, oh, man.
Can we read the part that he says what he did?
Sure, go for it.
Go ahead. Should do I? It, girl. But do it with meaning, or it's not worth doing.
All right. Well, okay.
Lene was very famous for being dramatic, so I'm ready for it.
Was I?
She was very popular in high school.
Wow.
Hey, careful. Shut up. What are you trying to say?
In a dramatic fashion. I wasn't saying you were like a hooker. I mean, just go.
Shut up. Okay. He says, Jesus God, Claire, you try to stop me taking my vengeance on the man who made me play whore to him, who forced me to my knees and made me suck his cock, smeared with my own blood. Christ, Claire. He flung the door open with a crash and was in the hallway by the time I could reach him. And she tries to run after him. And, of course, he's too fast for her.
I mean, she's pregnant.
And in a big dress.
Yeah.
But,
probably some unruly heels as well.
Yeah. So she begs him at this point. Begs him to wait just the year. A year until the child that is Randall's, that will lead to Frank, will be conceived next December. And she asks him, she begs for her sake to wait that long. Whew. This whole scene, I can't wait to see this played out because it's going to be very, very intense. And it's going to be very... And just the whole back and forth between them and him saying, like, it's him or me. You have your choice. I can't live while he lives.
You know what, though?
Either let me kill him or kill me now. And he puts the knife in her hand.
But what Jamie isn't getting, and this all goes back to the time travel paradox, is that without Frank, she would never have gotten back to Jamie.
Yeah.
She would most likely disappear.
She would most likely disappear.
Well, she out of the time. Out of the timeline.
Yeah.
Because if Frank had never existed, they would never have been in Scotland on their redo honeymoon, which means she would never have gone through the stones.
Yeah.
Which means she would never have met up with Jamie. So him ensuring that Frank exists is vital to their timeline.
Yeah.
So he's not going there. He's totally in the, this dude effed me beyond
comprehension.
Thank you. Beyond anything that is
mentally and physically, right? And spiritually, and any, like, any which way you can.
I can't get past this.
Every which way you can.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So because of that, he can't see. You know, it's like you can't see the woods for the trees, is what they say. So it's like he's stuck in this. This is what he did to me, as opposed to big picturing the whole thing.
I just can't wait to see this Sam and Katrina play this, because him holding her hand around the knife and holding it up to his throat and saying, kill me now, or let me kill him, you know, let me do it. And her fighting against it. And I mean,
it's going to be, yes.
I can't wait.
So book good. Two, say it again, like you've never heard me say it. My freaking favorite book of the series, period, full stop. Second favorite is book six, but whatever.
No, book three for me.
No,
I can't talk about it
Hold
now.
On. Yeah, you can't.
But book
three. Gonna have to wait.
All the books are my favorite. I love them all. Outlander, to me, is incomparable to any of the others. It's just, it's the first, Outlander, it's where they meet, blah, blah, blah. But my favorite, my individual favorite is the second book, which we're doing now. But ditto what Lene just said. It's going to be awful and wonderful and heartbreaking and all of that to see that acted out. But I'm also looking forward to the end, because we know they're going to, they kept almost everything, if not everything, from book one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine seeing just Wentworth?
I am really looking forward to that.
And I almost had, and Lene trying to save his soul. Sorry.
No.
And Claire trying to save his soul.
Yeah.
Or sorry, saving his soul.
No, I know. I'm looking forward to that.
Shadow monkeys. Okay.
So anyway,
Shadow monkeys?
She pulls
shuttle.
Shadow monkeys?
Shuttle.
Shuttle.
I don't know.
How is that better?
She just makes this stuff up.
I do, every day.
Just don't worry about it. So Claire decides to pull out of her back pocket, you owe me a life, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Not once, but twice over. Because she saved his life in Wentworth, and then she saved it again at the Abbey. And she says, you owe me a life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he agrees to it. Even though it's killing him. Even though it's like literally tearing him apart. He agrees to it.
It's tearing his guts out.
Tearing his guts out, yeah.
I'm sure you've all seen that
And
trailer.
So he takes his, what, it's his right hand, his bad hand, right, that he punches into the stained glass. It's his bad hand, right? His right hand is his bad hand.
Right?
Right?
Yes.
Shut up.
Correct.
You're right. That's what he punches through
His right hand is his bad hand, right? And I was like, right.
Anyway, he punches that into the stained glass window. And cuts his handle up.
And probably ruined that stained glass window.
Nah, yeah, well, it'll, like, yeah.
Pick something that's not going to be worse than thing in like 10 years.
It'll be fine. They'll find somebody to fix it. So he, doesn't he leave?
It's possible.
He says a year then. He gives her a year and he leaves. He smashes his hand through the glass and he leaves. But he won't let her touch him and he goes past her and leaves.
I mean, he gives her the year, but does he?
He's, well, shut up.
He, you can't,
hold on, you can't go forward. Anyway.
I know, but I can't help it.
He promises her
at
a year.
At this point,
he says, I can give you a year. And here she's sitting here by herself thinking like, you know, is he going to forgive me? You know, I mean, he...
But they're so. But both of them are so not even seeing outside of their own sphere of reality. Like, he's not seeing that big picture of, if Frank doesn't exist, I'm never going to meet you.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And she's not seeing outside of, if Frank doesn't exist. She sees that. If Frank doesn't exist, I'm never going to meet you. Whereas all he sees is, this a-hole, like, butt-raped me.
Yeah.
And Summer. Granted, that sucks. I don't want to be butt-raped.
Or spiritually raped or mentally raped.
Any of that. I don't want to be raped. Let's put that out there. Can we put that out there and make it official? No. Yeah. I don't want to be raped.
I don't want to be raped either.
I don't. So, I mean, and he's in this very visceral place, whereas she's trying to think big picture, and he's just like, this dude effed me. He effed me hard. He effed me repeatedly, and he effed me in my brain and other places.
And he brought up your name and associated you with this nasty pain.
That
was a whole other level of effing.
Okay. So she goes to bed, finally, and he comes in after midnight, and she says she wants to help fix his hand again, because I'm sure he's probably broken his finger again or something, or at least cut up his hand really bad. It's bleeding. And he says, doesn't matter, go to bed.
LNG, I think, has a good point. So she writes, Claire claiming her due for saving Jamie at Wentworth, as you said, Summer.
Yeah.
And the ending to the chapter, slapstick without being funny, things piling on to one another over the chapter, and Claire didn't break under it, shows her strength and her conviction to at least keep Frank from harm. Now, I've never heard anyone say this. Maybe it's something we're supposed to get on the down low or extract from this mentally, but you're right? They both have their own, I don't want to say agendas, but their own reasons. We understand and can totally... We understand Jamie's reasons for wanting to kill him, and we get it.
Mm-hmm.
We get it.
But I just want to say this.
But I haven't finished.
I know, but just try to hold it for a second. I just need to say this, because I've been saying that she's big picturing it. She's not big picturing it. She's thinking, I love Frank. Frank is this man I've loved.
And that's why I said, give me a second, because I'm going somewhere. So we understand Jamie, right?
Mm-hmm.
We understand both of them. Jamie wants revenge. Totally understandable. And he gives her a year. And like Summer said first, you can take from it that she's thinking big picture. And, you know, I love you, Jamie. I want to be with you. I want to stay here. But in order for that to happen, fuck.
What?
I can't say it. Exactly. I couldn't say it.
That wasn't even like...
In order for them to get together, and this is where what you meant by big picture, Frank has to exist. And from what they know now, it has to be, BJR has to be alive. At least till this baby is born. However, Summer, that's exactly where I was going. It's not just that she loves Frank. I think there's still, yes, it's obviously self-serving because she wants to end up being with Jamie.
But I think she wants to save Frank.
Exactly.
He's an innocent man.
But she also feels
guilty for staying. Yeah.
She made the choice. She owns it. But that doesn't mean she doesn't feel bad for
she
someone
chose
that she
Jamie
left.
And she feels guilt over that. And she doesn't feel like Frank should die just because I
She's
chose
like,
Jamie.
I already made this.
He should.
I already Shut made up. This. I already made this decision and tore apart Frank's life once. I want him to at least have that life.
Yeah.
I don't want to change things or mess things up more or whatever. So, yeah, I think a lot of this, even though it's not mentioned as such, it is a little bit self-serving, which we understand. And we understand Jamie's reasonings. But I think Claire's feeling a little guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, to a certain degree, rightfully she should.
Well, I understand it.
Not that I begrudge her choice. I would have probably made the same choice because men in kilts are very persuasive.
So at some time near dawn, she wakes up and sees he's still sitting at the table. She left a mat.
It's a good sign.
And she just says, "I'm cold. Will you come and warm me?" And after a moment, he nods and stumbles into bed with her. And
but I wonder, it's like part of me is like, it was like misleading for him to do that.
Yeah.
Given where he's in his intentions with, you know, what he plans to do, it was almost like it would have been kinder for him to not do that, because now Claire's like, maybe he's okay. Maybe he's not going to do what I think he wants to do. Then he's like, "No, I'll come snuggle with you." And then she wakes up and he's like, "You know, Claire, I have to do this."
No, you know what? He keeps, you know what? We'll discuss it later.
Okay.
He keeps his word. You know, as far as he can, he plans to keep his word, and that's all he knows, and that's all she knows at this point. And he says that he loves her, and yeah.
All right.
And then they go to town.
And that...
with his maimed hand.
You know, because he's planning on getting one more oomph in before he, you know, goes to part four, which is entitled Scandal.
Scandal.
Is that correct? Okay. Scandal. High five. I can apparently pronounce that word in French.
And then the royal stud.
So that is chapter 21 entitled Untimely Resurrection.
You know what I find interesting? I'm sure you watched it. The interview with Tobias Paleyfest.
Yeah.
And they ask him about playing blackjack, and he basically says, you know, I don't know. Not saying he sympathizes with him, but can see, like, and maybe because he's played the part, you know, mm-hmm. he's like, you know, he has his own reasons for doing what he does. And it's not that, and he's obviously like a damaged person in mm-hmm. some way. But he's like, I don't really think of him as like outright evil, you know.
He should though.
And he's like, yeah, you know, I'd go and get like a pint with him or whatever. And I'm like, really? Okay.
Wowza.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I totally wouldn't.
Just sit and get drinks with him. I'm like, well, okay then. All right then. You're the only one. Yeah. Tobias, you are the only one.
But he has to. I mean, that's the nature of a good actor, is finding the redeeming qualities in a character.
No, that's true.
Because or else you don't want to play just... No. I mean, that's boring.
And you have to find the vulnerability of the character and the sympathetic...
Well, you have to find the gray.
The things you can find that are sympathetic about the character, you know?
You have to.
You have to play those parts. At least to make the part a real, well-rounded... real character, you know. It's just going to be real one. It's going to be two-dimensional and very one-sided if you don't.
I've heard many actors, actresses say that about playing baddies, bad guys,
mm-hmm.
crazy people, etc. It's that even though they have to do the research and, you know what the person did, know that they're a bad person, whatever. But they you know, speak with psychologists. They look at the psychology of the person, and they. Say, I've heard many times, they say that to a certain extent, they have, in order to do that person justice or the role justice, they have to find something, if not redeeming about the character or the person, especially if it's an actual person mm-hmm. who existed,
yeah,
they have to find something that they can tap into to see why that person did what they did or why they believed
it.
You
see their motivation.
Exactly. Exactly.
One of the things that was impressed upon me when I went to drama school. I sound nerdy saying that. But when I was in school, they always said that regardless of the size of the role you played in a part, in a show, if somebody asked you what the show was about, you had to say, it's a show about, and then you started with your character. Mm-hmm. And you had to find...
Cool.
You made... Even if you weren't the main part in that show, you were like, it's a show about... And then you explained your character and why your character, you know, was... And you made it like that show. Even if you were, like, the smallest, most insignificant role in the show, that show, when you described it, had to be about you. Because if you don't make it about you and you make it about other people, how do you play that?
Yeah. No, that's true.
So, and that's just part of it. I mean, you have to make the character...
Tell the story through their eyes.
You have to be able to connect with that character.
Yeah.
And if you can't find something to connect with them, you're not going to be able to portray it accurately. in a way that people can connect with. And I don't think people ever should connect with Black Jack Randall because he's kind of an awful person.
But he has to feel real
and believable. He has to find the reasons to make it
worth doing.
Right, or else he's not going to be able to play that. You can't just play evil.
Yeah.
Evil is not playable. Now,
evil is flat.
It is, if you don't have facets to it. I mean, evil is evil, but you have to be able to find the lightness in the darkness. You know what I mean? No one is ever black and white.
No.
Because you've met people in your lifetime that are just like horrible people. But you have to understand that for those people to exist, they have to live in a grayscale. They are the hero in their own story.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't agree with them and I think that they're not nice people, but to them in their life path, they're the hero of that story.
Well, it's like saying one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. It's the same thing. It's just from a different point of view. It depends on what side of the story you're telling. And yeah. Anyway. So the chapter ends and they're in bed together. And
as every chapter should end. I would like every evening of my life to end with me and Jamie Fraser in bed together. Can we make that happen?
Sure, Stars, Summer.
Yeah. Sam, anyone available? Make that happen.
Good luck.
I'd love that. You know, it's like The Secret. You put it out in the universe. If it comes back, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Don't hold your breath.
Put your phone down. And that is chapter 21, entitled Untimely Resurrection.
And that was chapter 21. Join us next week or later this week, depending on when the episode gets up.
Whenever our next episode is, it'll be 105. Join us for that one.
Yes. Or we will be discussing, I believe, something about Comic-Con.
I think we spent a few minutes talking at the beginning of the episode. I think it's somehow related to Comic-Con.
And No. It's going to be about Comic-Con.
Wait, I thought it was about Comic-Con.
No. We don't have time for that. We're going to talk about Comic-Con.
Okay, and speaking of Comic-Con, a little ridiculous, but speaking of Comic-Con, we haven't said this yet. We've teased it a little bit online. It's going to be, like we said, our experience of Comic-Con, how we got down there, things leading up to it, fun stuff, funny stuff, all this. And some of the fun stuff that is absolutely Outlander-related from Comic-Con. Wait, Comic-Con, right? We're talking about Comic-Con?
No, we're talking about Comic-Con.
Okay, great.
Please just straighten it out and talk about Comic-Con.
I'm trying to get my head straight. So, in the next episode, we're going to be talking about Comic-Con in general, our experience there, and, of course, our Outlander, our coverage of anything and everything that we could do Outlander-related.
At Comic-Con.
At Comic-Con. Just Summer, no, Comic-Con. So, there was a panel, the Outlander panel at Comic-Con, right?
No, Comic-Con. Comic-Con.
Sorry. And then there was something like a little table thing, or a round table, or a square table.
No, a Comic-Con?
No, Summer. Get your facts straight. Comic-Con.
Oh.
Okay. So, we were able to also be at the Outlander Press Roundtable.
At Comic-Con.
At Comic-Con. Okay, this is getting a little old now. So, we were able to do the Outlander Press Roundtable and also be in and live tweet the panel at Comic-Con.
Oh my gosh. That was a day.
And it was a day and a three or something like that.
We'll talk about it.
But also, and this is the little teaser we'll give because
we're so past teasing at this point.
I'm not going to say what it is.
I mean, we're talking about Comic-Con.
Well, it's something that happened at Comic-Con. We do, okay, put it this way. Our position, our being at the round table was not an exclusive because there were other press there. But we got an unexpected but much welcome exclusive while at Comic-Con, right? Comic-Con?
Comic-Con.
Okay, Comic-Con. And we will share that with you, and that's all we're going to say. So thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.